His corpse returned to Cuba. Talk about the significance of that. John Lee Anderson, the author who wrote about Che, interviewing the general who just in an offhand way happened to say, oh, yes, we buried him under the airport here.
Yeah, and in many ways, the current Che never, the celebration and honor of Che never went away. But in some ways, this current revival really did start with that repatriation of his remains back to Cuba. And it also corresponded with the resurrection and reemergence of a Latin American left. Those two things marked each other. In some ways, one inaugurated the other. So it's interesting. You know, but there's another legacy that was reported on in the Latin American press. I don't know, it didn't get much attention here, is that the person who actually did who killed Che, who actually pulled the trigger, he's a Bolivian, and he's still alive, and he just recently received a cataract operation in a clinic that was built by Cuban doctors, that was staffed by Cuban doctors. So that, I think, is that captures the legacy of Che right there. Very,
very nicely. Leave it there. I want to thank you very much, Greg Grandin, for joining us. His book is called Empire's Workshop: Latin America, the United States, and the Rise of the New Imperialism. You, together with Juan Gonzalez, Cheza Boudin, and Tarek Ali, will be at the Brecht Forum tonight at 6:30, talking about the significance of Che Guevara. Tarek Ali will also join you. We'll have on our broadcast tomorrow. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke.
And that's Democracy Now! Heard on WUSB Stony Brook, where it's 4 minutes after 6 o'clock, which means 4 minutes late for Off the Wall. And a good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, October the 9th, 2007. And live in the studio, hopefully taking phone calls a little bit later on. We even have a special guest tonight. And all sorts of things to talk about like we always do. Because the world is just such an interesting place. And listener mail, lots of listener mail to read as well. We're going to get into that. And yeah, getting all the papers together. Sorry happening to cut off Amy like that, but she ran late. 4 minutes late, it would have been 5 minutes late if I didn't step in. Gotta do something about that. All right, so we have all sorts of fun things going on, continuation of some of the things we were talking about last week, which there was a story that moved today, a story I saw on BBC, which just simply blew me away. Absolutely incredible, unbelievable. It's just the kind of thing you cannot make up. You can't make this up. All right, ready for this? A British teenager who was accused of possessing material for terrorist purposes has appeared in court. The 17-year-old, who was arrested in the Dewsbury area of West Yorkshire on Monday, was given bail after a hearing at Westminster Magistrates Court. Okay, nothing all that earth-shattering right now. Got another terrorist off the streets. Okay, you done? You done celebrating that the terrorists are being defeated? All right, here's what he is accused of doing, of having. It's alleged he had a copy of the Anarchist Cookbook. Yeah, the Anarchist Cookbook, that wonderful book from, what is it, the 70s, 60s, whenever it came out. And it contains instructions on how to make homemade explosives. This has been around for so many years now, it's not even funny. His next court hearing has been set for the 25th of October. He faces two charges under the Terrorism Act of 2000. The first charge relates to the possession of material for terrorist purposes. The second relates to the collection or possession of information useful in the preparation of an act of terrorism. He stood in the dock wearing a baggy blue hooded top and only spoke to confirm his name and date of birth. After the 40-minute hearing, he was released on bail under several conditions, which I'm not really sure what the conditions are. It does not go into that. But a second 17-year-old who is facing similar charges has already been remanded in custody and is also going to appear in court on that same day, the 25th of October. This is unbelievable that simply possessing a book that you used to be able to buy in bookstores, maybe you still can, I don't know. This is enough to have you classified as a terrorist in England? And possibly here soon, too. I think we need to make sure that book is reprinted as much as possible and distributed everywhere as a reaction to this, because this is just crazy. I mean, we've talked about crazy things before, but boy, it doesn't get much crazier than this. Having a book, having one single book that the authorities don't like, and you get charged under the Terrorism Act. Nah, this just cannot stand. And if we let it stand, we might as well be doing it ourselves. We might as well be charging people with these crazy crimes. Unbelievable. And what else? Well, the Blackwater thing continues, of course. It's really kind of a sad story. Today, actually, reports came out that gunfire from a private security convoy killed two Iraqi women driving through Baghdad on Tuesday. You know, and there are people who will say, well, you know, they shouldn't have been doing that. These Iraqi women should not be driving through Baghdad. it's simply incredible, the justification you hear for these things. One of the officials said the firm involved was a Western private security company. The firm has not been named. I don't know why they get away with not being named, but they do say, or Blackwater USA at least, if we can believe anything they say they're not involved. Got nothing to do with this one. Of course, that company is under intense security over Iraqi claims that the guards protecting U.S. government officials killed civilians in an unprovoked attack last month. Actually, I'm sorry. It was last month. It was last month. Okay. Here's some more details on that. Details have been kind of emerging. Should have been a lot of details out from the beginning, but we're slow to get news sometimes. Three black GMC Suburbans, each fitted with armored plates and bulletproof windows, made up the heart of the convoy. The front and rear were protected by Blackwater USA gun trucks known as Mambas, each mounted with two belt-fed 7.62 caliber heavy guns. I know a lot of people know exactly what that means, and I have no clue. Doesn't matter. The vehicles snaked through the checkpoints and blast walls of the Green Zone on another scorching morning. The temperature that day, September 16th, would rise above 100 degrees. Kerry Pelsman, a U.S. aid specialist helping to rebuild Iraqi businesses, schools, and other infrastructure, rode in one of the Suburbans. Her appointment was about 2 miles from the nearest Green Zone entrance. And that was in a neighborhood of opulent homes once occupied by members of the Saddam Hussein regime. Within a few minutes, Perlsman was again in a secure compound for a planning session on ISDAHAR, which is a U.S.-Iraqi joint venture company that was working to rebuild Iraq's badly damaged services and funded by USAID on a three-year contract. At about noon, a car bomb exploded about 200 yards away. Blackwater guards hustled Pelsman, back into the vehicles, worried the bomb was the beginning of a larger attack. The convoy raced back towards the Green Zone. Attempts by investigators to piece together what happened over the next hour have been like gathering the remnants of broken glass, spent bullet casings, and blood-soaked clothes that were scattered around Nusra Square. Actually, I think that's exactly what it was like. They wrote this as if it was a metaphor, but it really wasn't. It's exactly what they were doing. Gathering broken glass, bullet casings, and blood-soaked clothes. Each bit represents a part of the story, a version, a perspective, but have not yet yielded a full and mutually agreed rendering of what caused Blackwater guards to open fire. It's very unlikely that all sides are going to agree as to what happened. But who are you going to believe? You're going to believe the people that were standing around the street and not really allied with one particular regime or another, but just simply were going about their day-to-day business? Or are you going to believe the people that are accused of murder and have to cover their asses? It's tough, isn't it? It's a tough call. Who's more likely to give a full and honest description as to what exactly happened on that day? I guess it's all up to each of us. An Iraqi government report is the latest probe in a wave of inquests from Baghdad to Washington. It comes down hard on Blackwater, demanding it leave Iraq within 6 months. Now that's within 6 months. Before it was immediately. But now they're backing off a bit because they realize that they have absolutely no control over the Americans over there. Demanding that they leave Iraq within 6 months, and they blame it for killing 17 civilians on September 16th. The previous death toll was said to be at least 11. The Iraq report, as well as eyewitness accounts and statements from Iraqi officials, present new details on the deadly chain of events. Iraqi officials spoke on condition of anonymity because they feared possible retribution or were not authorized to provide details of what happened. Yeah, it's incredible. It's incredible. We're over there to fight the people that are gunning civilians down and taking revenge on them. And now we've become them. Yeah. Retribution. Retribution for testifying against Blackwater. So, Blackwater and U.S. officials have refused to comment on the events. Blackwater has said in the United States that its convoy in Nusra Square opened fire only after coming under attack. No Iraqi witness has been found to corroborate that claim. As Pelsman's convoy was preparing to move toward the Nusra Square traffic circle just on the edge of the Green Zone, her Blackwater detail radioed for backup, fearing the explosion might be a diversion for a kidnapping operation against her and others in the compound. At about 12:15 p.m., four additional Mambas arrived at the traffic circle. Their plan was to watch over the traffic choke point until the convoy passed. What should have been a relatively routine mission went terribly wrong when one of the Blackwater gunners in the last Mamba that arrived in Nusra Square opened fire on an approaching white car driven by Ahmed Haitham Ahmed, a 20-year-old third-year medical student. He was shot through the forehead and apparently died instantly. The car, with the automatic transmission still in gear, continued moving slowly forward. His mother, Mahasin Kazim, a 46-year-old allergist, was in the passenger seat and reached over to cradle her son's body. At first, there were 5 shots, and after that, I heard a woman screaming, my son, help, said Sarhan Thiab, a traffic policeman who was on duty in the square. I ran with another policeman toward the car, and we tried to pull the woman out. She was holding her son. His head was blown apart. We tried to stop the car, which was still moving slowly because the son's foot was on the accelerator. Thiab said the Blackwater guard started firing at the car again. I tried to use hand signals to make the Blackwater people understand that the car was moving on its own and we were trying to stop it. We were trying to get the woman out but had to run for cover. Continued heavy shooting set the car on fire, burning the corpses of both mother and son. Haitham Ahmed, a 46-year-old pathologist, he's a real terrorist, aren't they? Doctors and interns and medical students and things like that. Amazing. He was the father and husband of those first 2 victims of the shooting that day. My son and wife had dropped me near my hospital and went off to run errands when they were stopped in the square. I waited for them all afternoon, kept calling their cell phones. At 5 p.m., I called a relative who lives near the square. He told me there was an incident and many people were killed or wounded. I went with him to the hospital morgue. All the bodies were recognizable except for the two burned bodies. I was able to identify my son's body through a piece of his shoe. I could tell the other was my wife because of a dental bridge. Ahmed said he would not remove his destroyed car from where it still sits near the square. I want it to be a memorial to the painful event caused by people who supposedly came to protect us. My wife was a distinguished woman, a talented doctor. My son was a gentle and cooperative person. He was on his way to becoming a doctor. They died while they were fasting in the holy month of Ramadan. They died as innocent people. I ask God's mercy on them. Mohammed Hafez, a 37-year-old who owns a car parts business, lost his 10-year-old child, Ali Mohammed. They were in the car immediately behind the white car. He wept heavily as he told the story. We were six persons in the car, me, my son, my sister, and her three sons. The four children were in the back seat. My car was hit by about 30 bullets. Everything was damaged. The engine, the windshield, the back windshield, and the tires. When the shooting started, I told everybody to get their heads down. I could hear the children screaming in fear. When the shooting stopped, I raised my head and heard my nephew shouting at me, "Ali is dead, Ali is dead." When I held him, his head was badly wounded, but his heart was still beating. I thought there was a chance, and I rushed him to the hospital. The doctor told me that he was clinically dead and the chance of his survival was very slim, and 1 hour later, Ali died. He said children in his neighborhood, unaware Ali was killed, still show up at his house asking if Ali can come outside to play. I understand that it is God's will, but such people should not be allowed to work in Iraq, he said of Blackwater. Hafez said he was interviewed by three U.S. military officers September 26th at the Iraqi National Police Headquarters, about 500 yards from Nusayr Square. He said he heard other witnesses telling the U.S. officers they had seen a Blackwater guard trying to stop the shooting. The witnesses said the guard even pulled his gun on the other shooters, who ignored the threat and continued firing. At some point during the chaos, the Blackwater guards there must have radioed the Pelsman convoy to the north and warned it not to take its planned route back to the Green Zone. No witness ever saw it in the square. Pelsman declined to comment. A U.S. Embassy spokeswoman, Mirimbi Nantongo, said she could not give details of the convoy or its members for reasons of security and privacy and to protect the integrity of the ongoing investigation. Once shooting stopped in the square, the Blackwater guards moved the four gun trucks clockwise around the traffic circle against the traffic flow and headed north towards where the Pelsman convoy may have been rushing back to the Green Zone by a less direct and longer route. Even as they were withdrawing, they were shooting randomly to clear the traffic, said Ahmed Abdul Timan, a 20-year-old who was standing in the middle of the traffic circle throughout the shooting. He works for the Baghdad city government as a guard of the traffic tunnel that runs under the square. In addition, he said two helicopters were overhead and shooting into the melee into the square below. The government report reached a similar conclusion. They began shooting at the people. One man was shot in his shoulder from above. It wasn't heavy fire. Another witness in the square, traffic policeman Hussam Abdul Rahman, who said his cousin was killed in the shooting, told reporters that he saw helicopters over the square. I saw small helicopters flying overhead as well as two Apaches flying at a distance. Only the small helicopters started shooting. Ali Khalaf, yet another traffic policeman in the square, a lot of traffic policemen in one square, told of helicopters firing from above. They began shooting on the cars on the Harthaya north side of the square. The four gun trucks left the square in that direction through clouds of green smoke. The armored vehicles often use such cloud canisters as cover. The helicopter shot and killed the driver of a Volkswagen and wounded a passenger, Khalaf said. The wounded survivor escaped by rolling out of the car into the street. The government report said a second Blackwater convoy, apparently not Pelsman's, tried to move through the square shortly after the shooting. This is interesting. Iraqi police used water trucks to block the GMCs from entering the square. It moved into an intense standoff. Weapons pointed by both sides, Iraqi police and Blackwater. And the face-off was diffused when two U.S. military Humvees emerged from the nearby National Police Headquarters and persuaded the Blackwater drivers and guards to turn around and return to the Green Zone. You know, reading a story like this, it's just hard to imagine how any of this could be justified, defended, how the presence over there continues to this day. It's really pathetic. It makes you ashamed. And I only hope that something is done to actually get justice. But I gotta say, I don't think it's gonna happen. I don't think it's gonna. Do we know the names of any of the people involved? No, they're all protected. The Blackwater's able to continue operating over there. Do you think these people ever see the inside of an Iraqi courtroom, which is where they really should be? Most likely not. Most likely they'll be given the same treatment that a cop gets when he shoots an innocent person. He meant well. Yeah, he messed up, but he meant well. Meanwhile, in the United Kingdom, the total amount of troops over there will be 2,500 by next spring. That's less than the number of Americans that have been killed over there. That'll be the total they have. They are withdrawing. They are putting an end to this nonsense. And yet it continues. And yet we stand by and just watch. Pretty sad. Pretty pathetic situation over there. Okay, well, let's try not to be too depressed today, as we do have other things to discuss. But I thought it was important that you hear the story. You hear the witness reports. And that maybe you'll talk to somebody about this as well. Okay, Germany is building a maglev railway. Yeah, they're coming up with the funds to launch the first magnetic levitation rail service. The state of Bavaria is to build the high-speed railway line from Munich city center to its airport, making it Europe's first commercial track. Maglev trains use electric-powered magnets that enable them to float above their tracks, allowing for much faster speeds than traditional rail services. The 2.6 billion dollar plan had faced financing problems. However, the Bavarian state government said it had signed an agreement with rail operator Deutsche Bahn and industrial consortium Transrapid that includes the developers of the train, Siemens and ThyssenKrupp. So yeah, they keep building things over there. I mean, it's incredible, isn't it? It's really pretty amazing that they are able to do this. And I know I get letters from people who say that, why are you always ragging on the U.S.? Always criticizing, never can say anything good. Well, you know, look at our high-speed rail network, the one that doesn't exist. And that's a good reason to criticize, to see things that are just not progressing in this country. And we can go on about that. I've all sorts of material on this. I don't know if we'll have time this week, but I certainly want to talk about the future of high-speed rail in the United States, because it's pretty pathetic. Okay, here's what I'll try to do, just to appease the people out there who say that I criticize things here too much. I'll try and come up with something that's critical, and then we're going to move on to some other things. When I was traveling back, this actually happened. It's an interesting story. I was traveling back to the States a couple of weeks ago from Italy, and I had to stop in Dusseldorf on the way, which Dusseldorf in Germany. And my complaint comes from something that happened in Germany. I was switching planes, same airline, same basic airline, I think. It might have had different allegiances to other airlines, but I think it was the same airline. And I got off the plane and just wanted to switch. I wanted to switch to the other plane. There was basically, I think, an hour and 45 minutes between flights, so I had plenty of time. And when I got off the plane and was in the terminal, I was looking for signs saying where I was supposed to go, and there were none. There were some flights listed, and that was for Terminal C. I wanted Terminal A. I had no idea where Terminal A was. There weren't signs or anything like that. So I had to stop in a luggage room and ask somebody, how do I get to Terminal A? And she said, well, you have to go outside, and you got to take a shuttle and all this whole big thing. So basically, you mean I have to go outside and go through security a second time, even though I'm just switching planes? Seems a bit silly, but okay, I guess that's what I have to do. So I went outside. I went through the thing that said nothing to declare. I guess I could have gotten stopped and searched there, which I didn't, fortunately. So I entered Germany, went out into the street looking for a bus or a shuttle or something that would take me to Terminal A, and I couldn't find anything. Still no signs. There was absolutely no indication. I stood at a bus stop thinking that was the way to do it, and no bus ever came. And I realized this was a city bus. It wasn't a free shuttle bus, so that didn't seem like the right thing to do. So I went back inside, and I asked somebody. There were no staff people anywhere. I was looking for an information desk, couldn't find one. I finally went to a car rental desk and asked them, where's Terminal A? And the guy said, here, you're in Terminal A. I'm like, well, how did I do that? How did I get into Terminal A without ever going anywhere? And apparently, A, B, and C are all linked together in the same building, and A is just simply another side of the same building. That woman could have told me that, saved me the trip outside and standing at a bus stop like a fool. But fine, I was in Terminal A. I said, okay, you know, enough of this nonsense. I'm going to go get into my regular gate or whatever. I have to go through security all over again. Might as well get it started now. So I tried to get to security, and they stopped me. They said, no, you have to turn this boarding pass into a ticket. And I was like, what? Turn a boarding pass into a ticket? That's the opposite of what you're supposed to do. Usually you have a ticket, if you even have a ticket, you have a sheet of paper or something, you turn that into a boarding pass. I had a boarding pass. It had my seat number and everything. Why can't I just go past this particular point and wait for my plane? But no, you have to go and convert this into a ticket. So I was like, whatever, okay, fine. I had to wait on, I think, four different lines before I finally found the right one, because there are no signs to say, here's the line to stand in to turn your boarding pass into a ticket. Or I'm sorry. See, I even have it backwards now. Your ticket. No, wait, that's right. Yeah, boarding pass into a ticket. All confused. So finally, I waited in this line. And basically, finally had a long conversation with somebody. I asked them, well, why do I have to do this? And she said, well, because you're transferring from Italy to Germany, and we don't know that your passport might not be expired. And I said, well, wouldn't they have discovered my passport wasn't expired in Italy when they looked at it? And she said, yes, but the rules in the United States might be different. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? I haven't even been to the United States yet. Why are you dragging them into this? This is simply me going from one terminal to another, transferring from one flight to another. It's like all logic has gone out the window here. Usually Germans are so efficient at what they do. But in this case, it was like I was in some kind of weird Twilight Zone Germany. Nothing made any sense. I had to stand there, and she stamped all these things and basically turned my boarding pass into a ticket and then into another boarding pass, which had the exact same information on it as the other one. And then I had to go through the line again, go through security. And basically, I almost missed a plane that I had an hour and 45 minutes to catch in the same damn building. So, yeah, I can find things to complain about in Germany, in Europe. And I'll even add something to this. I'll add a postscript. When I first was online in Italy, I followed the directions to check in at window number 254. I even remember the number. Stood in line, waited behind somebody, had a long discussion with the agent. Finally made it to window 254, and she said, well, sir, this is for business class. Like, okay, well, you know, the sign says for me to go to window 254. Oh, no, you have to go to that line over there, window 252. Where about 30 people were standing, you know, the commoners, the ones that aren't first class. And so for 45 minutes, I had to wait on that line. And guess what? You know what happens when it gets really, really crowded? They open additional windows. Guess what window I wound up back at? Yes, 254, same person. Oh, so yeah, there are things to complain about. But at least they're not invading other countries and mowing down people. Not at this stage, anyway. Okay, I've rambled on for way too long. We have a special guest who's in the other studio, and hopefully I can figure out how to get to him. Red Hack joins us.
Hello.
There you are, and you have a loud buzz for some reason. I don't know why. Mm. Hear that buzz?
Yeah, I hear it.
That's not a good buzz. Maybe it's the channel. I don't know if there's much I can do about that. But we put you in another studio because, there are no headphones in this studio for you to listen to hear things that might be on in the background or whatever. But I'm wondering if maybe it's better to have that than to have... Well, why don't you talk for a minute, and I'll try and change you to another channel and see if I can get rid of this buzz.
All right.
So where have you been? You've been in Finland?
I've been in Finland for the past 3 months.
And what have you been doing in Finland?
I've been serving out my military service there in the Finnish Defense Forces, the army branch of it.
Red Hack, I'm going to have to switch this patch cord, and so we're going to lose you for just a second.
All right.
But I'm going to continue talking while I do it. That way, nobody will know exactly what happened. Okay, now you should be back on a different channel.
And I'm still buzzing.
Is the buzz still there?
Yep.
Oh, I don't believe this. Okay, it's an obstacle course here. I don't know why there's a buzz. So the buzz apparently is between studios. We have a buzz between studios. I'll tell you what, you see the light above you? There's a fluorescent light. Turn that off. Maybe that'll make the buzz go away. I'm sorry, folks.
Nope.
Okay, now the buzz is still there. And you have that fan going in the background, but that doesn't make a buzz like this. It's really it's unpleasant. All right, well, I'm sorry. Maybe we'll bring you in here in a couple of minutes. But tell us, so you're serving, you're American, though. You're an American citizen. What are you doing in the Finnish Army?
Well, I'm dual citizen.
Uh-huh.
So I have Finnish citizenship, too. And in Finland, if you live there and you're a citizen, you have to serve in the Army. Also, if you don't live there, but dual citizens don't have to. But if I were to move there, I'd have to do the service.
Uh-huh. So, okay, so I know you've been talking about this for quite some time. Red Hack, by the way, you may recognize from Off the Hook, has been on many times on that program. And I know you've been talking about this, looking forward to it, going over there and doing your time in the Finnish Army. But the Finnish Army, it's not the same thing, really, as joining the American Army, is it? I mean, what would you say are some of the differences?
Well, one of the differences is it's not deployed anywhere.
Uh-huh.
It's there purely for defense. So if we were invaded by a foreign nation, I'm not going to name any names.
Nah, not start any trouble.
then we're meant to defend the country from attack. But it doesn't. There are peacekeeping troops that Finland has, but those are not part of this. It's, you know, you have, that's voluntary. That's, you know, you say I want to be peacekeeping troop, and then you get sent somewhere.
Uh-huh.
But the requirement, the citizenship requirement, is just to be in the reserve. So you spend anywhere from 6 months to a year training, and then every couple of years you can come back to do training again, you know, refresher courses. But, you know, Finland, I think, has one of the largest reserve armies in the world because half of the population is in the reserve.
Uh-huh.
So...
Now, when you say they're not deployed anywhere, we had an interesting discussion about this earlier. Basically, the difference between our army, our navy, whatever, here is that basically you see the world, you go everywhere because you're invading other countries or you have bases in other countries. You know, what you're maintaining is that Finland has this radical approach where you actually keep the military bases inside the country and only use them for defensive purposes?
Right.
Now,
the only way you can see the world in Finnish... defense forces if you're in the Navy, because then they get to go just to different ports to mm-hmm. practice, I guess, going
to practice,
to different
docking,
places.
Docking, yeah. In different ports. Well, okay, that's interesting, but let me just put this to you, Red Hack. If every army did this, if every army simply stationed their defense forces inside their country and used them simply to defend their country from invasion from other countries, where would that leave?
Well, we wouldn't need any armies because nobody would be attacking.
Yeah, yeah. And then where would our military infrastructure be? I think it's rather dangerous to use the army to just protect people.
Military infrastructure would still be there because there's still fear, mm-hmm. right? There's always fear. People are always afraid of being attacked or invaded or
uh-huh.
you have terrorism or everything. So there's still, I'm sure there'd still be military, even if nobody attacked anyone else, just because of fear.
Uh-huh. Well, now, what's the overall mood in the Finnish Army? I mean, what are people like there? Are they gung-ho into shooting guns and running around?
Well, it ranges. I mean, because you have everybody there, right? So you've got some people who are really into it and interested in it, and they're probably the people who will end up being officers and going to the military college there. There's a military college on my base.
Uh-huh.
So the way that it works is that the regular recruits end up staying for 6 months to 9 months. But about right after basic training, which is 2 months, people who are interested in becoming officers, you know, apply for it basically, or say that they're interested. And if they have good test scores, they have to be smart. They can't just be anybody.
Mm-hmm.
If they have good test scores, there's a math and vocabulary test, and then there's a psychological test. Then they move on to the non-commissioned officer school. They do that for a month and a half. Then they're tested again to see if they'd be a good reserve officer. So non-commissioned, there's two different levels, right, of officer.
Mm-hmm.
And then those who don't make it into the reserve officer school complete the non-commissioned officer training, and those who do the reserve officer training. And then the second 6 months of their service, they serve a year, is spent, leading the new recruits. So that's okay. How that works.
So is it what you expected?
It's an interesting experience. It's I've found that the my favorite part of anything I've done in the Army is when it's over. So you know,
right?
If I do a march, I don't enjoy the march, but when it's over, I'm like, well, I'm glad that's over.
That doesn't sound very strenuous.
Well,
march.
They can be strenuous when you start doing it with combat gear on and full gear with you. Sorry, I'm trying to think of how to translate things. Basically, like a flak vest on. I can't think of the translation right now.
So what do you think in Finnish now?
Well, I mean, I know a lot of the terms that I've learned in Finnish, right? Especially military terms. All the military commands. I know some of them, what they translate to. But, you know, if you said attention to me, I probably wouldn't do anything. If you said asento, then I would.
You're saying that since going to Finland, if someone screams attention to you, you won't know what it means?
Well, I mean, I'd know what it means, but I wouldn't have the same automatic reaction.
Oh, because, yeah, you don't really live in the military.
You end up with some trained responses, you know, to commands just because you do them all the time over and over again.
But on the other hand, we can bark out Finnish orders to you and you'll, by instinct, start to obey them.
Well, okay. Maybe. I don't know. You're not a higher rank than me, so.
Yeah, but you won't know that. You'll just hear the voice coming
If somebody, I've noticed, you know, in our barracks, sometimes people joke around and they'll pretend, you know, they'll walk into your room and pretend to be, and they'll say a command as though there were some officer coming to do something, and, you know, you immediately jump to it because you don't know. You don't see them coming in, so.
Right. So it sounds like a fun group of people to be with for the most part.
The people are fine. Uh-huh. And you know, again, you get all ranges, and you have people who hate being there, but, you know, they have to be, so.
So if you actually live in Finland, if you're growing up there, then this is mandatory. You have to be part of this.
Right. Okay. Yeah, or if you're just a citizen. We have people, you know, I've seen people come from, like, New Zealand, Canada, America. Uh-huh. Not just me. I'm not the only one.
So there's other Americans in your
group. But he is only a Finnish citizen, so he actually was.
There's only one other.
In my company.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, now, okay, so that leads to the question, you're a dual citizen, but also American citizen. You didn't have to do this. So,
right.
So why?
Well, I mean, all of my cousins and my uncles and all of them have done it. And I also am thinking about moving to Finland, in which case I would have to do it. There's actually a 28-year-old guy in my company who's there now because he moved from Sweden to Finland and now has to do his military service. I think the age limit is 28, actually. He should have waited a year. but there, you know, so if I moved there, I'd have to do it anyway. So I figured while I don't have a job, I'd get it out of the way.
Uh-huh. Wow, and what's basically the feeling towards America over there inside the military? Do people discuss what's going on in the rest of the world?
No, I mean, yeah, I haven't gotten any good or bad vibes either way. But for me, it's a little different because I'm not really I don't represent myself. I mean, they know I'm American, right? My Finnish isn't that good, but.
But regardless of whether or not they know you're American, do people talk about the world situation and what's been going on?
No, not really. But again, I have a skewed view because I'm being in the military, you're pretty cut off from a lot of stuff, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, you don't watch TV every day, so.
How do you get information?
Well, there's this one place during your free time. So if we're out camping, then we don't have any free time. But if we're in the barracks, we get free time every day.
Mm.
And there's this one place on the base called the Sotilaskoti, which means soldier's home. It's this volunteer run thing, basically run by mostly older women. And they have, you know, you can buy food and supplies there and stuff.
Uh-huh.
But also they have newspapers and they have computers there, so you can get online and you know, read up on stuff and read the newspaper.
Is anything blocked?
No, it's just, you can do whatever you want.
So now you say you're probably going to move to Finland, live in Finland after this.
Yeah.
What particular reason leads you to that?
I'd like to try to live somewhere else for a while. Also, then I'd be in Europe, you know, if I want to go on vacations, everything would be really close.
Mm-hmm.
I just need to see some more of the world. I've spent my life in New York. And
if you join the U.S. Army, you would see more of the world. You'd be going all over the place. Who knows where we're going to invade next?
Yeah.
Iran is beautiful this time of year.
Well, I think actually a side effect of me being in the Finnish military, I'm actually exempt from the draft.
The U.S. draft?
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
well, and that's
a plus.
That's around the corner, I'm sure. Well, how does the U.S. government view people like you who go and serve in other armies for other countries?
If their country is not at war with the U.S., it depends. I mean, obviously, you're not going to go serve in a foreign military that you have no allegiance to. But for dual citizens, it's okay as long as the U.S. isn't at war with the country.
So if a war with Finland breaks out, the U.S. and Finland...
I'd have to pick a side.
And you could just do that, pick a side, and then you become enemy of the state or enemy of Finland?
It would constitute as... Well, I don't know about the Finnish law, but on the U.S. side, if I sided with Finland, it would be me basically signing away my citizenship. It would be the same thing as going to, a passport official and saying... Uh-huh. Or a U.S. official and saying, I don't want to be a citizen anymore.
Yeah, I've had it. I've had enough of this.
Right.
It was fun, but now it's over. Well, and you don't have to answer this, but basically... When you're inside doing the drills and things like that, I know in the U.S. military they have targets. They have specific targets of enemies, and they label them as different countries and regimes and things like that. Do you do such things? And if so, who?
No, we don't. the only thing we have for targets when we're practicing. We have targets, obviously regular shooting targets that have points on them, right? Mm-hmm. But then when you're defending a position or something like that, they have training like that. And then we have these remote-controlled, they're basically just metal plates that come up. They're sort of, they're not really shaped like people, but, the hops are rounded. So I guess you could interpret it as being like the body with shoulders, right?
Uh-huh.
And those just pop up, and then you shoot those. But they're not labeled as anything. They don't look like people. They're just metal targets that come up.
Okay. But they're not particular, they're not like Swedes or Russians. Or,
no.
Okay, because those are the guys that, they're your neighbors, so I imagine that, if there was any kind of tension, that it'd probably be with them.
I wouldn't worry about the Swedes too much. Friendly with them.
Are you saying you could handle the Swedes? You could. yeah, all right. No, but it sounds like if you're going to go into the Army, it sounds like you did it the best way you possibly can, just by actually learning various things and getting into shape too. I must say you're in much better shape than you were last time.
You were
in fine shape then too, but I'm just saying you're in really good shape now.
It happens automatically there. It's not something you plan.
You cut all your hair too. Are you required to do that?
No, the requirements actually is that your hair doesn't cover your ears.
Mm-hmm.
That's they have a picture. You could have your hair longer, but it's just easier to just cut it off, and then you don't have to worry about it for a while. It's not like you have anyone to impress.
Do you find that people treat you different with all your hair cut off than before?
No.
Maybe they want to test you out a little bit and start something?
I haven't noticed any difference.
Right. Well, we should try. We have a leather jacket. We're going to go around town later, and you're going to wear the leather jacket with your head shaved off. Oh, your hair shaved off, that is. And we'll see just what kind of trouble we get into. But, wow. So how does it feel coming back to the States after how many months have you been away?
Three.
Well, it wasn't that long, I guess.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. It's weird. It's weird because, the language thing is weird because I'm used to speaking Finnish 5 days a week, at least, if not more. I usually speak English with my cousin on the weekends, but it depends.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, so that's one thing that I'm slowly getting used to. I actually had a lot of trouble when I first got here. I was trying to, write emails, and I was having trouble remembering words that used to come easily. So, I get sometimes confused too when I'm speaking in Finnish now. I'll throw in an English word, but I won't notice that I'm throwing it in.
Would we hear you throw in a Finnish word when you're speaking English?
Probably not.
Okay.
It's too basic for me.
This is one of the reasons why I don't learn other languages, because you get all confused and start speaking different words, and it affects your mind.
Yeah. It did happen to me once, actually. I was speaking to this guy in on my base. He's German, but he speaks only English and German, so I speak to him in English, obviously.
Uh-huh.
And I was saying something, and I guess maybe I was talking about something that was just something we'd learned in the military, but I just left that word in the middle. I didn't translate it at all. No, I guess it wasn't. It was just some random word, and I just it came out in Finnish, and I just kept talking. And he was like, "What?"
Interesting.
Yeah. So it can be confusing, but it's only confusing when I'm speaking quickly. If I'm thinking about what I'm saying, then.
Cool. Well, Red Hag, it's good to have you back here in the States. If only for a little while. You're going back, next week?
Yeah, Sunday night. I have to fly back. Okay. I have to be back on the base Monday, 2400.
Ah, 2400.
Yeah.
Or 00, right? I mean, isn't it the same thing?
Yeah.
0 hours?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one time you can say two different ways.
But, I mean, just when we have our stuff written out, our vacation times and stuff, they do it to be specific, Monday 2400, so you know it's the end of Monday rather than beginning.
And then the next minute is 001, right? Not 2401.
Right.
It'll get kind of ridiculous.
Right.
Hey, you hear this music underneath us?
Yes.
This is thanks to a listener. Last week, I returned from Italy, and I recorded some Italian radio while I was over there. And I played some tunes, and I wanted people to sort of experience what I had heard. And someone actually recognized who was being played. Now listen to this this letter here. The audio that plays at the beginning of the show seems to be some mix of Gigi D'Agostino, since his name is mentioned a few times. I'm a fan of this DJ. For more information, go to the Wikipedia page on Gigi D'Agostino. It's spelled GIGI D'Agostino. And also www.gigidagostino.com. Thanks, AB. You changed my life because I went out. I went to one of those Russian sites where you download the music and you pay for it, and I think it's completely legitimate. And if it's not, then it's not my problem anyway. But no, I really think it's as legitimate as iTunes, and you get things without having to pay a huge amount of money for them, and you get them quickly. And I was able to get this album really, really quickly and listen to it. I've been doing nothing but listening to this music for the last week. Thanks a lot. Really changed my life here. Someone else writes in, Emmanuel, I was curious if you could put a link to download the audio from the radio you recorded in Italy. Those are some great beats. They are great beats, aren't they? Huh? Yeah, those are great beats. I would not mind having a copy of that. Well, I think I've described the best way you can get a copy. Look at the various online sites where you can download music legitimately. And we've had a lot of good feedback to this. Dear Off the Wall, I love the show. Your away shows are unmatched and have a certain something that all others seem to lack, in my opinion. Keep up the good work. Signed, Brent. Thanks, Brent. I guess what you're saying is I need to be sent away more often. Yeah. Well, we'll make arrangements for it. Red Hat, why don't we bring you into this studio? That way we can lose the buzz.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, you know, we'll keep the buzz. We'll keep the vibe, but lose the that buzz. Yeah. I don't like that buzz at all. So he's taking the long walk down the corridor. We have a massive layout here where he's actually very far away, and it's going to take him a while to get here. And then once he does get here, we're going to go into delay and take some phone calls. Oh, here he is. Oh, he must have run down the hallway. 631-632-9872 is our phone number. It's 631-632-WUSB. You can sit in that chair there, and you see the microphone? This microphone right here? Not that chair. That chair. Oh, that chair has things on it. Do whatever you have to. Okay, we're going to move that microphone over. And what we're going to do is we're going to go into delay. You ever gone into delay before?
Off the hook, I believe.
Well, we've been in delay and off the hook, but I don't think...
We've gone into delay, no.
At this station, we manually go into delay. And it can be a little startling if you've never done it before, so I just ask that... do you have anything loose in your pockets? No? All right, good. Don't panic.
You have to go to 88 miles per hour.
It's kind of, it messes with your head a little bit, but usually comes, we've never lost anybody, let's put it that way. We do like to see the phones start to light up. 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB, that's our phone number, as the vibes of Gigi D'Agostino keep playing. The album I downloaded is over 2 hours long, so you can imagine I've been just driving around listening to this all the time. If you want to talk to Red Hack, who is here visiting from Finland for the next few minutes before he goes back next week, then give a call to this number. I guess the best thing to do is to launch into delay. I always make a mistake somewhere, so hopefully I won't do that this time. What we do is we have an ID that lasts exactly 6 seconds or so, and that's the amount of time it takes to go into delay. And then I come back, and we start talking as if nothing happened. So let me get rid of Gigi here. Sorry. And I'm going to switch my headphones, so I'm monitoring the other channel. And then what we're going to do is play the ID, which is over here. And then next thing you know, we're going to be in delay.
Special K from Fishbone, and you're listening to WUSB, Stony Brook. Listen.
All right, and here I am in delay. I have to make sure, though, that it actually worked, because sometimes...
I hope so.
Sometimes it doesn't work. Okay, and it did work. And Red Hack, did you make it into delay okay?
I hope so.
Something's wrong. You answered me before I asked the question. How is that possible? Wait, you hear that?
Say something.
Hi.
Oh, dear, there's an alarm going off in the station somewhere. Say something.
Have to come back.
Hi.
Okay, you see, you said that before I asked you to say it. This is, oh boy. Okay, I'm going to have to come back. I'm going to come back and get you. I'm sorry, this is, ugh. All right, turn the damn alarm off. Let's try this again. I'm sorry, I must have done something. I hit the wrong button. Okay. All right, we're going to go into delay again. Let's try this one more time.
Special K from Fishbone, and you're listening to WUSB, Stony Brook. Listen.
All right, we're back in delay, and hopefully this time I didn't mess it up too badly. Make sure I'm here. Did I make it? All right, I made it. Did you make it?
Did I make it?
I think you did. Okay. Sounds like you're fine. But the thing is, we still don't have phone calls. Yeah, he's here. 631-632-WUSB. Please, that was very stressful and traumatic. Are you okay? You're sweating.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sorry.
I don't know where my shoe went.
You know, your levels aren't very good, considering that you're right in front of the microphone. Maybe you should move this right there.
Hello.
Yeah. Say something.
Hello.
That's much better. Yeah. All right, 631-632-WUSB is our phone number. You hear that? That's the call we're getting now. It's nothing. Absolutely nothing. We're not getting any phone calls. We only have a couple of minutes left. So if people have anything to comment on, or not just about the Finnish Army, but about the world in general, things we might have talked about in the past, we certainly would like to hear from you. And we only have a few minutes to do that. I always get complaints. People want to call in, and they say we don't give enough time for calls. Well, here we are. We have enough time for calls right now. We have listeners from all over the world. We really do. This station is broadcasting and on the FM transmitter and also on the internet.
Well, if you'd like, I could tell a funny story.
No, here's a phone call. No need for funny stories. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. I'm sorry, Off the Wall. Wrong show.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
On the Blackwater thing, it's like, I mean, you know, we on this side against the war, we get all up in this, you know, we use this as an example to point out to how everything that's wrong. Meanwhile, how about the concept of, you know, imperialism or the war is wrong? It's like, you know, these guys are not the entire the entire problem is so much bigger than this one atrocity. You know what I mean?
Of course, there are many atrocities, and the war itself, the invasion itself, is a big atrocity, and we seem to just forgotten that.
But of course, all we can do is focus on we who are against whatever the system. This is what we do. We, you know, not me, but it's accepted to like point out, you know, in the liberal press or, you know, the good press that wants to make it be critical. You know, this becomes the issue. No, this is not the issue. The issue is, why do we go into countries for hundred years and, you know, take the resources and kill whoever gets in our way or destabilize the government so it doesn't threaten us? That's the issue.
You sound impassioned about this. That's a good thing.
Sorry, man. Later.
Oh,
bye.
That's okay. People seem to think that's bad when I say they're impassioned about it. It's good. You should get angry. Everyone should be as angry. If everybody was as angry as that caller, we would not be invading other countries. We would not have our men and women dying over there. We would not be killing other people. We would not have things like Blackwater. I don't know. Do you think there's any hope for us, Red Hacked?
Well, we'll see what happens after the next election.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Do you really think that the Democrats are going to make things any better, assuming they even get in?
No.
Yeah. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I am doing well, thank you. I just wanted to say real quick, I was actually in Japan when you were going all over the world on your airplane ride. And it was kind of neat because I know you travel a lot, and I'm trying to do the same thing. I actually tried to go to North Korea as well, but a bunch of buddies of mine backed out at the last minute.
Oh.
I ended up going to just one country for a month and a half, and I'm kicking myself for doing it.
Uh-huh.
But it was kind of neat listening to you, you know, traveling all over the place, and I was actually in a foreign country myself, being an avid listener. And just wanted to thank you very much for just for being there. Basically.
Well, thanks for listening, because it makes it all worthwhile knowing people are out there getting something out of it. And yes, whenever I go somewhere, I bring a microphone with me and try to record as much around me as I can, including the radio. And sometimes, like with the music we just played, it really kind of changes your life. You find something, you stumble upon it. Listeners can contribute something and tell you more about it. And before you know it, you've learned a whole lot. It's really kind of cool.
Yes, I enjoyed it a lot, and I'm assuming that I don't remember this, but when you were in Japan, I'm sure you went to Akihabara?
That's the, electronics area?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. That was intense. I want to do that again.
Yeah, I'm going back again. I actually met somebody, and I'm going back again this spring.
Okay. Hey, thanks for your call.
Not a problem. Thank you.
All right. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for calls. In fact, we're going to go right back out of delay. So stand by for a second. And we're back. We're back live. Red Hecht, I want to thank you for coming in and saying hi to us.
Yeah, no problem.
And
my pleasure.
Hopefully you'll be back soon. I don't think you won't be on Off the Hook tomorrow, though.
No, I can't make it tomorrow, unfortunately.
That's too bad. But we'll be following. Maybe we'll hear from you over in Finland on Off the Hook occasionally.
We could try to plan something.
All right, cool. Hey, it's October 9th, 2007, 67 years ago. Really cool person was born. And just want to pay a little tribute there. It's amazing how time flies. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Hey, this is Finn, and you're listening to Finn's Revolution on WUSB, Stony Brook.
I'm going to a town that has already been burnt down. I'm going to a place that has already